You're listening to episode 188 of Women Worldwide. What's it like when you're the CMO of the New York Stock Exchange and you get bit by the entrepreneurial bug? Stay tuned to find out. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Everyone, thanks for tuning into another episode of Women Worldwide. You are all helping so much to power up the voices of women who are creating an impact. And you know what? As a result, our network continues to grow. So thank you so much for all of the help. Today's show is based on taking your skills from one role to the next. So let me give you an example. I was the president of a marketing communications firm for 12 plus years, and now I'm the CEO of my own consulting firm. And a lot of what I learned as an agency owner, I took the best of that forward into my role today. And you know what? My guest certainly has a lot to share about morphing and changing her role. It's a perfect segue to Marissa Riccardi. So Marissa Riccardi, earlier in her career, was vice president at Goldman Sachs. Then she became the CMO on the New York Stock Exchange, and then made the leap to business owner and founded her company, the Riccardi Group, which is a B2B marketing firm at the intersection of big and small. And really what her company does, it's bringing together that Fortune 500 experience and strategies, all infused with entrepreneurial spirit, nimbleness, and disruptive thinking for her clients. So Marissa's here to share her career journey and experiences with you and all the important skills that she's learned along the way. And it's such a pleasure to have you on my show, Marissa. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So how are you doing today? I'm sure that there's lots of things going on in your world.
There always is. Thank you. But I'm doing great.
That's great to hear. I would love to. It seems like there's such a big difference between being at a company like the New York Stock Exchange and then pivoting to entrepreneur. So maybe you could just take us back a little bit to talk about what was it like to be the CMO?
Well, it was amazing, and I enjoyed so many things. There are so many great things to talk about. I don't know where to start. I'll start by saying the NYSE or NYSE Euronext, which was our sort of formal brand when I was there, had many different business lines. So as a marketer, the ability to get into the mindset of all different personas and business lines, from trading to technology to the IPO capital market business, you know, it was different every day. And so it was just really thrilling to kind of have that type of responsibility. And working for an exchange in and of itself is a different type of company. So when you think about an exchange, every country usually has an army, a post office, and an exchange. So there's this huge sense of national pride when you work for an exchange. And that was quite unique from any other company I had worked with.
That sounds unique. I didn't even think about that sense of national pride. But you know what? You wore, I guess, a lot of many hats when you said there were so many great things that you were doing. Do you think that's part of the reason why you could pivot over to entrepreneur? Because we do wear a lot of many hats. And maybe you could just back it up and tell us, when did you first realize that you wanted to be an entrepreneur and a business owner?
Sure. So part of the role of marketing at the exchange was to engage and nurture the startup community. So the startup community founders, their companies, their employees, really the, you know, the lifeblood of the job market and future job creation, because many of those entrepreneurs and founders eventually grow up to be public companies, or they grow up to be larger private companies. But regardless, it's a community that's really important for an exchange, because you, you know, leverage your past, but you're all about also growing, helping grow the future. So throughout that process of meeting with and interacting with entrepreneurs, you know, explaining the benefits of the NYSC, I got to feel the entrepreneurial spirit and meet with a lot of companies and their employees around sort of the magic and the pride that they had growing this company. And again, you know, our role as marketers, and my role specifically, was to help convince them that they should, if and when they went public, to debut their stock price and debut their company in the public arena with us versus our, some of our competitors. And so getting, you know, access and working with companies like Twitter and Yelp and Pandora and their employees was just magical. Like the ability to see them through launching in the, and debuting in the public markets, ringing the opening bell. I think that was a spark that probably I didn't realize at the time, but just I captured, and I wanted to be part of that somehow.
That's huge. I mean, if you think about those companies today, they're so popular, and you know, they're a part of our vernacular. So your experience, I could see almost, you mentioned the magic and the pride. It's contagious when you're in that community.
It really is. It really was. And in hindsight, I think that helped equip me to running my own business, having diversity of my day, of my team, of, you know, just taking a risk. I mean, they were all risk takers, and salespeople at the core, and marketing as a function is, I think, really, you know, an intersection of marketing and sales and risk taking. So now it feels like a very natural transition, but then it wasn't a deliberate plan. It just sort of happened.
That's interesting, because, you know, when you talk about the intersection, the sales and marketing, the risk taking, that is definitely something that is carried forward from your role at the exchange. It has to, into your own business, whether it's calculated or it's just you're pure out there risk taker. So do you see anything else that has carried forward in terms of your skills and what you've learned and what's really helping you today?
So I think a few things have carried forward, both internally and how our company culture has been created and how we continue to create it internally, and probably and leveraging and carrying forward other ways of operating externally as well. So on the internal side, specifically, a lot of the team members that worked with me have since then joined my company. So not only did I carry ideas and lessons over, but I also brought over some team members physically.
That's cool.
You know, we just had a great connection and chemistry and know how to work with each other. So many of my employees are from kind of previous lives. So that's a great community. But I think, you know, it's a little different in that this company is not as homogenous, perhaps, as an internal marketing team, meaning our skill sets and abilities vary, and they're very different and they're very diverse, largely because we have a small boutique company, but then we add on to different types of freelancers and partners to add diversity of thought into the business. So my company is small, about 10 to 20 people on any given day based on the project. But then we tap into other resources, writers, designers, developers, PhDs in cultural linguistics, all different types of people to help, you know, service clients. And I think that's different and one of the things that I wanted to build differently within the company. In fact, the former CMO of Mondelez, Dana Anderson, who I never met, but I read something that she wrote years ago and it stuck with me. And she compared the agency model to kitchens and how the agencies have to evolve. And it just struck me because when you think about a kitchen, you know, kitchen tables are really warm, they're inviting, important things are discussed as a family. Or if you think about like the WeWork now, the cafe, it's a big farmhouse table.
Great.
And it's, you know, it's the reason why if you're building a home, or you are looking to buy a home, you want a big, great room with an open kitchen so you can talk and invite different people to dinner. And I think, you know, maybe that's the Italian kind of upbringing, but this idea that when you have different people in a room, you may have a different outcome. And so I like this idea of having a core group of family members within my company, but then we add in different people based on the problems that we're trying to solve. And, you know, I like to use that type of language because it doesn't feel as sterile as saying we have a bespoke team, but it's one of the things that, you know, I sort of carried forward from my previous roles, and that I wanted to create an environment where, you know, using this type of language gives an intangible clue to what it's like to work with us in terms of connectivity and trust and partnership. So that's, I think, one thing that we've created partially from taking best practices and sort of tweaking it to what felt right for us. And then everything that we've been created internally just gets replicated externally. So we treat our clients the same way. We treat them as partners. We treat them as human beings, as, you know, as, and we'll try to be as results driven as possible for them. So, you know, our clients get the best of our people, the outcomes are better, and it just feels like we're part of this big, the collaborative kitchen together.
Yeah, I love that analogy. There's something that really resonates there, because even when you think about the kitchen, there's, you know, I watch a lot of the real estate shows, and you see people walking into some of the kitchens, and the first thing they say is, oh my gosh, we've got to renovate. And it's the same thing. You certainly can't be using an old model when things for your clients are changing so rapidly. And this whole pool that you tap into where you're diversifying and there's different talents, that's really important too, because you want to be able to customize for every client as well. So it sounds like this is really very much a part of your culture, the way that you've set up structure and you're working with outsiders as well. So that's cool.
It is, yes.
And no matter what structure you put in place, and no matter how many great folks you have internally, strength of culture, or externally, pool of resources, there are always challenges. And no matter how skilled you are, there are still challenges. So maybe you could talk about challenges, and the challenges that you had at the exchange, are they different than the challenges that you face today? How do they compare? What does that look like?
So I think whether you're in a corporate role or a C-suite, like I was at the exchange, or you're running your own business, I think the commonality is you're always doing a million things at once. And so the biggest challenge is, for me, has always been prioritization. What to do first, what to do today, what to do this week, what's next month, what's this year. I mean, that is, I'd say, similar in both a corporate role and your own company. What's different is that you have direct responsibility for the livelihood of others. And so there's an additional level of pressure, an added pressure, knowing that the buck stops with you and that you're ultimately the one responsible, whether you're working on an account or not, whether you are responsible and did the actual billing, whether you were the one that actually hired the new, you know, employee. Ultimately, you're responsible. And I think that's both challenging and rewarding. It's certainly different from corporate life. And even after 5 years, I'm still getting used to it. I think another challenge that's different is hiring, and just general hiring practices. When you're hiring within a big company, you know, there's usually an army of HR professionals that are helping source talent and screen for resumes, and there's just an engine behind finding great talent. And even if the talent needs training, they'll set up training programs to help bring that individual to the next level. You know, working for yourself, that doesn't exist. And you're really ultimately responsible for that.
Yeah, there's a big difference, the large company and how much HR is a part of the process. And there's also something to be said about being directly, so directly involved in making sure that the person you're hiring meets and fits the culture. I mean, I know we do that in any role, but you know, as an entrepreneur, it's your baby, right?
You're right. Yeah. And I think it's a combination of hiring inbound and then perhaps even outbound if the person isn't the right fit. When it's your own company, you want to know, why was this candidate not the right person? Where did we go wrong? What could we have done differently? And when I say we, I mean me. Like, yeah. Why did I fail this person? Why did this person fail me? I mean, it's a very personal feeling of responsibility and ownership. And I think that's a major difference.
Oh, definitely. I don't think, this is a generalization clearly, but when you are in a corporate role, there probably is a lot less of where did I go wrong. It's easier to say, oh, that candidate didn't fit the culture. That candidate couldn't cut the day to day. But when it's your baby, I'm on the same page with you in terms of where did I go wrong? What happened? How can I not have that happen again? So you really take it to heart. I guess that's the bottom line.
That's right. And I think taking it to heart and having that responsibility and that emotional reaction is a positive thing. I know the jury's still out on emotions at work, but for me, you know, that demonstrates passion. And so if, you know, I get upset and I get really excited when we find great candidates, and I get upset when we, you know, lose them. I mean, that's just part of the ups and downs of running a business.
Yeah. If we don't have emotion, we're not human. Clearly it's always a balance of the emotion and the strength that you're showing as a leader, but I wouldn't take either of those qualities away. It's a nice, healthy mix of both. And that's male and female, not just women leaders, but men too. They kind of have to be in tune with their emotions. Otherwise, we're all a bunch of robots, and we certainly don't want that. What about leadership skills? So what leadership skills do you think are really essential for women? You know, whether they're working for somebody else or, you know, they own their own company and they're their own boss.
So I think it's actually what you just talked about around. It's not about being, a male or a woman and showing emotion. Here, I think it's less. I also think it's less of a gender issue, meaning the leadership skills that are required to run your own business, I think, is more of a personality issue, like knowing your personality. Are you the type of person that wants to work for someone else because perhaps it's less risky and you know you're guaranteed a paycheck? And if you go away on a vacation, the company after 200 years will not close.
Right.
You know, and I know many men and women who prefer to be their own boss on the flip side, and they don't want to work for an institution. And so, you know, I think it's more of a personality issue in terms of a skill set, like knowing what your appetite for risk and reward is. The one thing is true, though, which is you have to consider whether you want to have a family as a female and how that will play into your career. Because until men can have babies, it's just an additional factor we have into the mix. I mean, starting a family is a job within itself. And so how much of a risk can you afford to take in working for yourself? I think there's pros and, you know, pros and cons of working for yourself versus working for someone else. And I think it really comes down to the risk you can take, the type of personality you have, and what type of family dynamics you have going on.
Do you think entrepreneurs in general think about their personalities before they take that leap? Or is it something that they figure out along the way, and sometimes it can be the hard way?
I can only speak for myself, which is I never thought about it that way. Yeah. Sounds so sophisticated to say it now later after the fact, but
sure. We all do that.
Right? I mean, knowing my personality, I'm not surprised that I ended up here because, again, I'm a marketer, I'm a salesperson. I like to work hard, I like to win, I like to see results. I've trained for marathons. I'm a classical pianist. I like to play music.
That's so nice.
I'm driven. And so I understand how I'm running my own company now. But again, I didn't evaluate that in any formal or structured way. But I really do think you have to have sort of a heart and a skin for, you know, for volatility, for sure, because there are a lot of ups and downs. And and maybe coming out of the capital markets and working on Wall Street for so long, I'm used to volatility. But it's one of those things in hindsight, I think I've been able to reflect, but I don't know how others think about it.
You know, Marissa, I'll tell you, in any situation, having a heart and skin, I really like that. If I ever use that line, I will give attribution to you. Okay. I'm going to ask you just to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give love to our sponsors, Pure Performance and Prep Dish. Marissa, have you ever heard of Prep Dish?
I have not.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, for the on-the-go entrepreneur and business owner, you'll be happy to learn about them. This episode of Women Worldwide is brought to you by Prep Dish. Let me ask you something. Do you struggle with prepping your meals in advance? And are you tired of asking yourself over and over again, what should I eat today? And better yet, are you sick of your family asking you what's for dinner? And then hearing, oh no, not that again. Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore. That's where Prep Dish comes in. A subscription-based meal planning service, Prep Dish is gonna save you time and helps to make your dinners much more appealing and really tasty too. It's so simple. Here's how Prep Dish works. Every week, you receive a weekly meal plan with a grocery list. You know upfront all of the ingredients that you need to have to prep for the entire week. You do your shopping, you set aside 2 or 3 hours to prepare everything in advance. So for example, prepping on a Sunday sets you up for the entire week of meals. And if you think about it, your meals just became easy. You're saving time, you're more efficient in the kitchen, but best of all, you and your family are eating meals that are different, nutritious, and delicious too. I love the sweet potato frittata and the superfood salad, so you might want to check those out. So that's why with my crazy schedule, I let Prep Dish do the planning for me. And now you can too. Prep Dish has a fantastic offer for you, the Women Worldwide listener. You can go to prepdish.com/worldwide and get 2 weeks of Prep Dish free. Try it. You'll love it. prepdish.com/worldwide.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Yesterday's techniques won't work. Today, you have an opportunity to expand your communications approach with fresh, creative, and effective ways to power up your brand voice through new channels and to interact with more value and meaning. Pure Performance Communications will work with you to move audiences from awareness to action and impact. You'll foster greater engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Let us help you uncover what's holding you back and help you to carve out a marketing and PR roadmap to success. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with 2 M's.com. Now back to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Marissa Riccardi, founder and CEO of the Riccardi Group, and I were just chatting about leadership skills, the different roles that Marissa has had throughout her career, and some of the challenges in business. And, you know, Marissa, when you were mentioning when you were at the exchange and working with the entrepreneurial community and sort of that magic that was contagious, that was really motivating. So I'm wondering, what does motivation look like you today, and what motivates you to do what you do so well?
Great. Well, I have a family. I have 2 kids. I have a mortgage. I have a team. So part of my motivation is I want a certain type of life, and I want to really create that life for myself. I see the responsibility of sort of owning that outcome and the results of running that business, being able to be successful, contribute to, you know, my family, whatever way it shows up, that is definitely part of my motivation for sure. And I think that's different than passion, like the motivation to, you know, be successful or have a certain type of life is different than, you know, sort of passion for what I do. And whether that's, again, running a marathon or practicing a new song, just showing up and seeing results, I think is really what drives me.
Absolutely. And I know there's so much passion behind you and responsibility too. You know, you mentioned your family and I feel the same way. I show up, I'm present every day. I have a passion to help people. I like to say get unstuck in their storytelling. But at the end of the day, with a larger family, and at one point, all those kids, there were four of them, they were in college, and that mortgage, that's a responsibility too. So I can definitely relate. When it comes to your team, you mentioned success. What makes a team successful? And I know that you have all different teams that you put together for clients, but are there certain qualities that you look for in people that you're adding to that team?
So the two things I look for most, probably in the team, and I guess what I expect of myself as well, are independence and integrity. So my team members, they work independently, they have their own respective skills and expertise, but the integrity that they hold themselves to at such a high standard, especially when I can't be there, to me is the top sort of quality that I look for. You know, we get to all choose the way we show up at work and in life. And I just choose to surround myself both personally and professionally with people who have high levels of integrity and expect a lot of themselves and just want to have a positive impact. So, you know, knowing on some level that everything we do as a human, we have the choice to deliver business in a certain way, show up, to your point, in a bigger way. I mean, those are sort of that intangible quality is something that I definitely find important to surround ourselves with in the company and hold ourselves accountable to each other for that. So I think that's kind of number one, which is a lot, I know, baked into that. But number two is just the accountability as well that goes into that. I mean, being accountable to yourself shows that independence, that autonomy, and then being accountable to me and explaining and telling me, not being afraid to say when I'm wrong and to push back. Like doesn't matter. It's not an age or experience thing. It's just a maturity level that I think is really important, especially when you're running a small business.
Absolutely. On the accountability note, because when people are accountable to themselves, and then they are accountable to you as the owner of the business, you can also bet that that's going to extend outward to your clients, and they will be much more accountable for the work that they're doing and how they're showing up with clients. And the same model of the independence and the integrity and the accountability that you're building on the inside suddenly becomes a part of the outside communication and experience. And that's the most important thing. Do you see that?
Oh, I couldn't have said it better myself. That the same principle. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so glad that's happening.
All right, because the same principles that you operate internally or you have as a human being is what you deliver externally. I mean, you're the same person. It's a very sort of symbiotic relationship. So if you're trustworthy and you're accountable to yourself and you know, in our company, like I said, we're very focused on results and outcomes and sort of earning that, then our clients are going to feel that. And, you know, the clients won't trust us if we're not delivering. So if we're not delivering and we're not accountable to ourselves, then we're not going to be accountable to clients. I mean, it feels very natural to say that, but I find a lot of companies have that hard to deliver. I have a hard time delivering. So we definitely, we carry everything that we do through to the work that we do externally. And so much so that our sort of positioning and our tagline, if you will, is outside perspective with an internal commitment. I mean, we're really viewed as an outside agency. Obviously, we're not in, you know, we're not full time for the brands that we get the pleasure of working with. But the commitment that we have and the accountability that we have is as if we work there, and we take that ownership and that ambassadorship very seriously.
You're an extension of their company, and that is the best way to be. It's a true partnership. You are not a vendor, you know? I think that's the best way to work with a client. So the word trust, this word trust, it keeps coming up. You said clients, they're trusting us if we're accountable. So I guess, because we all talk about trust, maybe you can break it down for me. What does trust mean to you, and how do you approach trust? Is trust there at the start, let's say when somebody joins your organization, or is trust earned? And I know that's a hard question, but.
A great question. To answer the second part first, I think you earn trust. Obviously, if you have a previous relationship with someone, you've worked together with them before, you automatically trust them. And in our case, that was the case. We have many of my team members have all worked together previously. So I think there's an inherent trust. But for some of our new employees, there is a level of, you know, trust but verify. I think it was Reagan that said that.
Yes.
So I definitely fall into that camp. And for me, trust, you know, it's not a period of time that we're looking for. It comes down to, it could be achieved on the first day, which is just about delivering and seeing results. If someone says they're going to do something and then they do it, and they do it well, and they do it on time, and they even do it perhaps before it's due, that sort of immediately shows me that immediately earns my trust. And I think it's in both directions. If I say I'm going to be a great employer and I'm going to provide these types of benefits and I'm going to create a great culture, and I don't do that, then why would you trust me? I mean, it's a combination of earned, but also showing results and delivering what you say you're going to deliver.
Absolutely. And businesses go through tough times, and employees go through tough times. But if you can earn that trust, I mean, it's what, if you're in public relations, it's like you look at the public and the business wants to have their cup of goodwill full, right? Because when something happens, that trust allows you to move through and manage any of the issues. So, you know, do you see that as well within your company, or even when you were working at the Exchange or Goldman Sachs, that when you have the trust, it makes the hiccups a little bit easier?
It does. I think, again, going back to the volatility comment from before, trust, I think, helps during those dips.
Yeah.
In times, in markets, in personal lives. I think there's a level of transparency that's also maybe synonymous with trust, in terms of being really open around a challenge that we're having, or perhaps a period of time that will be difficult, and explaining that. I think you earn trust by sort of being brought into the fold and under, you know, under the hood a little bit. I'm not going to keep things from my team members or from my clients if there's a problem. And I think while it's difficult to talk through that, or talk through someone's, you know, behavioral change perhaps that needs to be changed, or work that wasn't exactly where it needed to be, the ability to own up to that, take accountability and talk through it and be really open and sort of humble about it, I think is another way of earning trust.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, the transparency factor. Because if you have that trust, clearly it's built up because you're being open and you're transparent around what is going on. And that level of communication only makes the cup of goodwill fuller, if you will. You mentioned before, you know, showing up, make choices. Showing up, to me, you know, you can show up, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're present. So you make a choice to be present and alert and focused in everything that you do. But at the same time, Marissa, you mentioned you have a family, so you're definitely juggling a lot of things that are going on. Maybe you could just give us some tips on being very mindful about time management and staying focused in all different situations.
Sure. I practice radical presence, or I attempt to practice radical presence, both at home and at work. And what that means is when I'm at work, I'm at work. I'm present. I'm with my team. I'm thinking about my clients, and you know, I'm making to-do lists. I'm listening to interesting podcasts like this one.
Oh, thank you.
During my commute, I mean, I try to be as present for the hours that I'm here in the office. And you're doing a different, you know, a million different things, like I said before. And then when I'm home or with my friends, I am also radically present, or try to be radically present, which is when I'm at school drop-off, I'm socializing with the other parents. When I'm at home, giving my toddlers baths, I'm, you know, enjoying that time with them. Or, you know, the things that I'm reading, even, it's not, or listening to, is related to family life. I'm looking at mommypoppins.com for what to do with my kids on the weekend, or, you know, packing lunches. It's very specific, the things that I'm reading and consuming, to be where I am at that moment. And I, you know, I'd be lying if I said it was easy to compartmentalize who I am. Like, I operate at work with the same level of speed and wanting to do a million different things and get a million different things done. At home, I have that same speed of wanting to be with the kids, but plan for the future, vacation, and clean the house and do everything at the same time. But I feel it's just something you have to continuously work at, which is the, you know, the separation and trying to just be present with the people that you're with. Obviously, there's emergencies, there's, you know, email, technology has made that more difficult. But the radical presence and having that mindset, even if it gets me 80% of the way there, is better than 50.
Oh, definitely. I'd rather be 80% than 50. Do you feel that radical presence is something that you've been practicing back in the day at Goldman Sachs and at the Exchange? Or is radical presence something that is really a part of who you are now, and it's much more present?
It's definitely a new thing. In previous roles, I was mostly focused on work, and that was great because that was the time, you know, in my life where that was my leading driver, and I put all my energy and effort into that, and I loved it, and I loved what I did, and I loved all the companies that I worked for, and I was very fortunate to work with such great companies and teams. But now, I guess sort of by force, I have different things in my life. I have older parents, I have children, and you know, the time, the hours are the same. It's just about going back to the prioritization and really just being present when you're home. I think that the balance has become more of a challenge as I got older and my family also ages. So the multitasking, while it's very effective, mm-hmm. or I should say it could be very efficient, isn't necessarily always very effective. And I find that in this new world of running my own business and being an entrepreneur and being responsible for others, I'd rather just put in the right time, get it done once, and not have to go back and revisit it. Whereas in previous roles, that was okay because you're part of a bigger organization and it's an institution, and one mistake may be covered up, or it could take a longer period of time to make decisions. Then there's many other people that are responsible for making decisions. That's not the case when it's your own company. So you don't have the luxury of that time.
Exactly. And when you have smaller children or children of any age, because the minute you miss, you can't get back. In a business setting, you can miss something and, you know, hopefully it's not too detrimental to the business, but you can recapture, you can refocus, you can shift and pivot. But somehow with families, you know, and I'm speaking from my personal experience, I did miss a lot with my daughter. And when I was a solo mom, you just can't get the time back. So I really, really appreciate what you're saying about radical presence. And I hope listeners embrace that, because it is tremendously important. Marissa, how about some advice, just in general, rounding out our lovely talk today, about being a woman in business?
So being a woman in business is hard. Running a business is hard, period. I think being a woman and a mother running a business is more difficult because there's just so many demands on your time. And time management is probably the one thing that I try to be mindful of. I've had a lot of great advice, and especially other mothers with older children say things like you just said, which is you don't get that time back. So the ability to just really prioritize the things that are important. I could work all day and still not get done what I need to get done. So the one piece of advice I would say is the prioritization of what you absolutely have to do. I write a to-do list, for example, like really tactically speaking. I write a to-do list every day, every morning. It's very repetitive and monotonous, which I actually enjoy because you write down on paper so you visually see it, what you have to do, what you have to do, and what my team members have to do. So things they owe me and things I owe myself, or I owe my clients, or I owe my business, or I owe my employees. And every day I rewrite it. And there are things that will stay on the list for weeks at a time. And there are things that just have to get done. And I find that that daily prioritization, it only takes 10 minutes in the morning, helps me focus what's really important that day. And that day could be planning for next year, or that day could be planning just for today. But I find that it's the only way for me to stay focused and prioritized and not, you know, feel like I'm getting the right stuff done.
Right. 10 minutes that could save you a lot of time. And that's not a long time. That's a really good investment into your day, into your week. You know, you said even you're thinking about things that could be out a year. So thank you. That was really good advice. And last question, this one is so easy. Where can people find out more about you and your company?
TheRicardiGroup.com is the perfect place. And send me a message on LinkedIn. Simple as that.
Awesome. Marissa, thank you so much for coming on the show. All of your tips, advice. We just so appreciate your insights and your time. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate being on the show.
Well, it was such a pleasure. And I also want to thank PrepDish for sponsoring this episode of Women Worldwide. And thank you to all of you listeners out there for tuning in and for helping us to grow the Women Worldwide Network. We appreciate all of you. And if you have a moment, please rate us on iTunes. Give us a shout out on social media. We always, always love to hear from you and to hear your feedback as well. Okay, WW friends, please, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.